Welcome to the Self-Made Mind Podcast. We'll be bringing you real-life, honest conversations with some of the world's elite performers, from sporting athletes to millionaire CEOs and everyone in between. Success leaves clues. And it's now our mission to deliver these stories so you can start writing your own self-made script.
Hello, hello. Welcome back to the Self-Made Mind Podcast. It's been a minute, my friend. This is Alex O'Keefe.
And this is Craig Billington.
A.K.A. the Coffee King.
Yeah. A.K.A. the Coffee King. With A.K.A. the Window Cleaner King.
No, as it happens, we are speaking with the Window Cleaning King on this episode. Yeah. As it happens, mate. But yeah, how have you been, mate? We've had a slight break. We've had some time off, and just to let people know, we are moving the episodes to monthly releases now. Just to accommodate our lifestyles a bit more, because it's been busy.
Yeah, as we've been opening up again, and life's been getting back to normal, I guess. Can you say that?
Almost
there. So yeah, it's getting busy again, and but you know, there's plenty of podcasts to be had.
There certainly is. we've got some pretty damn exciting ones to release, mate. We've already recorded them, so we've got some good ones in the bag, mate. Today's a great one. Coming back in style. We're speaking with a chap called Lee Pryor. He owns the largest domestic window cleaning business in the UK. People think, oh, this is just going to be a chat about window cleaning, because obviously I own a window cleaning business, but it's not the case. It's just a really interesting story about how he's built his business from nothing, and now they're aiming to turn over £2 million. Within the next year. So it's quite a big deal, my friend. I know you didn't manage to get in with this chat, mate, but like I say, I've told you about it.
Yeah, you did. You did tell me about it. And I mean, I think just as a business point of view, and anyone looking at business side of things, you know, someone who can turn over £2 million for a year is quite impressive. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah. Mate, we both know being business owners, that's quite an achievement. And especially having a window cleaning business, that's massive. Yeah. And I know a lot of people within the industry are looking forward to hearing this conversation as well. So, you know, I hope it can help inspire a lot of people, because it were a great chat. He's a great lad. And he's got some great advice to offer as well. A lot of it is down to choice. He chose to do this. He chose to be successful. And the great thing about that is that anyone else listening, it's your choice to be successful, basically.
Yeah, definitely. So,
right, buddy, let's get this back underway. And, episode number 7, Lee Pryor. Mr. Lee Pryor, welcome to the Self-Made Mind Podcast. How are you doing, buddy?
Thank you, Alex. I'm doing very well, and thank you for having me.
That's okay, mate. It's absolute pleasure. Thank you for joining us, first of all, and giving us your time. We're just having obviously a bit of a chat before this, and you know, it's a bit of a personal one from my, you know, my perspective on this. As people know, I own a window cleaning company. You probably own one of the largest and well-known window cleaning companies in the industry. And we're here to not talk about window cleaning. We're here to talk about Lee Pryor, the man behind the business, the mentality, the setbacks, you know, the entrepreneur within the business. How are you doing, first of all, mate?
Very well, thank you. Yes, I always say I'm bearing up under the pressures of life, which was actually another friend of mine's phrase, but I liked it as it applies. seemingly on a daily basis, but very good on the whole, actually. Very, very busy at the moment. Yeah. It's tiring, but it's a lot of fun, I have to say.
Yeah. You wouldn't have it any other way, I'm guessing, would you?
No, I get bored too easily. I don't sit still. I don't sit still on holidays. I like to be doing something. So it's nice to have the constant challenge. And I think a little bit of stress is actually good for you.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, good stress and bad stress, isn't there?
Indeed.
I think I'm similarly. Like, even when I'm sat at home, you know, I'm always fidgeting about and having to do something. It drives me missus crazy, to be honest. She's like, can't you just sit still? But it's a bit of a metaphor for life, really, isn't it? It's like, you know, you've got to be constantly growing and constantly moving, which you clearly live in your life as well. So Lee, let's take it back to the start, mate, if that's all right, and interested in your story, mate. Take us back to your childhood and talk us up to the present day, mate, in a bit of a compressed version, if you can.
Wow, it'll have to be compressed, as 40 years is going to be hard to describe in the next 5 minutes. Yeah. We're going back as far as my childhood. Okay. Well, let's see. I was brought up as an only child in a single parent family. My father passed away when I was very, very young as a toddler, and my mother and her parents brought me up, essentially. And I grew up in a town called Redhill in Surrey. Went to school and college locally there, and was just like any other kid, played in the street on my bike and skates and, you know,
all the fun stuff.
Just went to a state school. I didn't have a privileged upbringing from a financial point of view. I had a great family that supported me and brought me up, but we were not particularly well off from a financial point of view. I went to a regular state school and college. I had lots of fun at those, actually. I enjoyed my time at school and college. I didn't really know what I wanted to do after college. I didn't go to university. I think, like a lot of sort of 18-year-olds, you start to see a few friends in work earning some money, and then they've got a car, and you know, you haven't got a car, and they've got this and you haven't, and you kind of want those things. So I didn't go to university, and I just got a job in a big office in the local town centre for not a lot of money. You know, like a lot of my friends did. We, you know, in fact, a lot of my friends from college went to work in the very same place. So and I fell into that sort of the 9-to-5 grind office work. And I sort of worked for a few different companies over the following few years, and they were all sort of either sales based business to business sales on the phone, on the computer, or customer service based sort of call center, open plan offices, you know, 100 people sitting around on the phone all day. Yeah. And that's how it went for about the following sort of 6 years, until I was getting into my sort of mid-20s. And then one day, a lot of us that worked for the same company were made redundant. One January, first week back after Christmas. At the time, I was just renting a small flat with a girlfriend, and was made redundant. Didn't know what I wanted to do, but I had given some thought to working for myself in the previous sort of 12 months. Had no idea what to do. Obviously, had the safety net of a job, had bills to pay, so it's kind of hard to take that step. Didn't
the
know
common
what
trappings, yeah.
Absolutely. Didn't really have a lot of overheads financially, but still, you know, renting, running a car, that sort of thing. And didn't know what I wanted to do. And as I say, a few of us got made redundant. I had a bit of a payoff from that. I sold a car that I sold the car. And between the sort of sale of the car and the redundancy money and some savings, I had about enough. I had enough money behind me to not work for sort of almost a year, 9 months, 10 months, something like that. And I thought, I'm not going to rush off to the local job agency and get the same sort of job again, which I had had several times over the years up to that point. I was, 24, nearly 25 years old at this point, 24 years old. Mm-hmm. And I thought I'd just give some time to think about what I might want to do. And I thought, I don't really want to work in an office environment like this anymore. I thought I'd try something completely different. And I gave some thought to sort of the trades, plumbing, electrician, those things. But, you know, the problem there was just, you've got to go to college for 2 or 3 years, qualify, then it's an apprenticeship on not much money for a while. And it just seemed like a long road. You know, at the time, I wanted something I could maybe get into a bit quicker. And one afternoon, my girlfriend and I were at her parents' house. And her parents were having a conversation about getting a window cleaner for their house. And I could overhear the conversation in the next room. And it just briefly sort of went, you know, have you found a window cleaner for the house yet? No. Why? There isn't one in the street that we know of, and the neighbors don't have one, and blah, blah. And I'm sort of listening to this in the background, and I'm thinking, well, you don't have to go to college to be a window cleaner. Well, yeah. I didn't think you did. And I just sort of took it on board that they had this trouble trying to find something that seemed so simple. Right. And I can still remember this really clearly. And you know, it's been like 16 years since then. And I remember driving home with her that day. And I said to my girlfriend in the car, I said, I'm going to be a window cleaner. Right. Yeah. And she thought I was kidding. You know, I'd always worn a suit to work, a shirt and tie, worked for big corporations in these big town centers near where I grew up. And she thought I was joking. And I said, no, there's a cleaning supply center around the corner from where we live, and I'm going to go there tomorrow and buy the basic tools for window cleaning. Right. And I did exactly that. I went there the very next day and bought those things. My nan's brother sold me a ladder, didn't give it to me. He was a retired builder, and he thought I should pay for it. And rightly so. Nothing should come too easy. Just literally very basics. So I was a traditional window cleaner, what they call a traditional window cleaner is
one of them?
In case someone doesn't know that's watching this, that's the guy that does it by hand with the squeegee blade and the mop, and they go up the ladder. And it all looks very basic, which it is. So not much money to spend. I think I spent about £200 to start my business. And I was very fortunate. My grandmother gave me her old car, which she didn't really use anymore. So the typical scenario of the little old lady's car that went to the shops once a week and there's no mileage on it. So I was very fortunate that I was helped a little bit in that respect. But essentially after that, I just made it up as I went along. And in that first year, while you're sort of trying to build your first steps, I also went and worked on a self-employed basis for Everest, the national double glazing firm, and I sold double glazing on a self-employed, zero money unless you sell something, commission only basis. And I did that in the evenings, and during the daytime I went out knocking on doors and delivering leaflets for window cleaning that I made myself. And actually the job with Everest taught me a lot about face-to-face sales, which I'd never done. I'd always been on the phone in an office, and the Everest stuff really, really taught me very good sales techniques and face-to-face, how to knock doors properly. And also you had to drum up a bit of that business yourself, which I'd never done before. And a bit like that with the window cleaning business to start with, you drum it up. And it just went from there. But that was the sort of story of how I got into it. Very slow at the very start there.
Yeah, brilliant. Well, obviously, when you get a new customer for the windows and doors, you can say, you know, I can also clean them for you once I put them in as well, I suppose, couldn't you?
What I used to do, I don't know if anyone watching this has ever had a double glazing salesman around, but it's not exactly the most exciting appointment of your life. It's a pretty boring product to sell. It's very expensive, especially when you work for one of these bigger companies. They're very expensive. But at the end of the appointments, which were always evenings and weekends, I always used to say to these families, by the way, can I ask do you have a window cleaner at the house? Which sometimes they didn't, sometimes they didn't. And I used to ask them if they had one, what do you like about it? What don't you like about it? You know, what's your opinion as a customer? How much do they charge? Just wondering, you know, I'm sort of getting into this game, you know, and they would, they would always tell me. So I got a feel for what was good and bad in the window cleaning industry in that first year or so when I was building up. And then after about a year, I created a full-time job for myself as a one-man sort of window cleaner with his bucket and his ladder, literally. And I let go of the double glazing stuff because I didn't really enjoy that. But it helped bridge the gap for me financially, that and the sort of money I had aside. So it got me into it, which, you know, is really the hard, I think that's really the hard part, like you said, there's barriers to these things, you know. People get into a comfort zone. People have financial commitments. The hardest part of starting your business is starting your business. The how do you pay for the food on the table while you don't know what the hell you're doing, starting a business. And, you know, I just kind of winged it in the first year.
It's one of those, Lee. I think I went through something similar in the fact that you've just got to completely chuck yourself in. Obviously, being a business owner, you take a lot of risks, and that's got to be your first risk. And it actually, you know, taking the step to start the business. I left the job that I was working in part-time, just at SCS, you know, the furniture company.
Yeah.
I was DJing and stuff at the time. Anyway, but I quit everything and just went for it, which you know, it's kind of a different angle to how you did it. But I mean, I think different people approach it differently, don't they? And I think probably the smarter way to do it is the way you did it, where you've got a financial sort of backing there. And, you know, because whereas for me, I took more of a risk in the fact that I didn't have any money. I literally just went for it. And, you know, some might say it gives you a bit of a bigger drive because you've got to make it happen. But like I say, there's different ways to go about it, isn't there, really?
Absolutely. And the funny thing is that I'd never really had any particular drive in any job I'd ever had. It was all just the same sort of money, you know, the hand-to-mouth mentality. You know, your life just is this repetitive month. You just go to the office, it's 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, or whatever the shift is. There's your payslip at the end of the month. A week later, you've spent that money, or 2 weeks later, it's all gone. The last week of the month, you're wondering, have you got enough petrol money to get to work? And then the cycle repeats itself. And that isn't particularly motivating for most people. It certainly wasn't for me. But the funny thing is, when I started the window cleaning, you know, as I said, I'd always worn a shirt and a suit to work and worked in these big offices. And now I'm a window cleaner, and I'm a one-man window cleaner. I've got a bucket and a ladder on this roof rack of this car. It's not glamorous. It's not the sort of thing that's getting, you know, girlfriends excited. Your family are kind of like raising their eyebrows. Your friends think you've like gone mad. You know, I've got family members cutting adverts out of newspapers for estate agent jobs or car sales. Why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? Why don't you get a real job? You know, but the thing is, as soon as I started working for myself, and I realized that there was a direct relationship between the effort I put in and the reward I got out, as soon as I felt that, and there's this sense of freedom about your day working for yourself, you know, I was addicted to that immediately. I can still remember feeling that way. Just the freedom of, like, you know, I can choose not to work today if I don't want to. I mean, I did work, but just knowing that you could choose, had a feeling that came with that. And also, as I say, the effort versus reward relationship, which you know, you can get in employed jobs, but not, maybe not, you know, you work harder than maybe the guy you're sitting next to, but they're earning the same money and there's no more recognition necessarily. So I was initially addicted to to that. And I would say that I still am. And as soon as I found this feeling within myself, the self-motivation sort of really kicked in. The drive is the point I'm making, you know.
Yeah.
And that feeling became addictive, and becoming driven and becoming committed to what you're doing became my way of life from then and still is now.
Yeah. Yeah, amazing. Yeah, I'm just relating to it because it's just like you suddenly get that. I were exactly the same, you know, too much month left at the end of the money.
yeah.
You know, you
I like
you
don't, that. Yeah. That's a new one.
Yeah, you can use that one later if you want, yeah. I think it just all comes down to, you know, it's just lack of education. That's all it is. And, you know, you don't get taught about how to handle your money, you know, do you? It's such an important thing in life.
You don't get taught that. I mean, actually, my family taught me that. You know, my family, there had been some business owners in my family, my grandparents, my mother's parents, who also helped bring me up. Although my dad had passed away when I was a toddler, he had his own business. So I was taught, although, as I say, I didn't have a very financially privileged upbringing, I was taught the value of money and, you know, being good with money. But, you know, what you're not taught at school and college are things financially related. I did business studies, actually, at school and college. And I can say now, having run my business for 16 years, that it teaches you nothing about running a business, nothing about how to start a business, absolutely nothing that matters in business. And that kind of makes sense, really, when you think about it, because if the teachers teaching business studies actually knew anything about running a business, they'd probably be running a business. Makes sense. Not that there's anything wrong with being a teacher. Obviously, that it's a great thing to be able to teach people that are young to, you know, be educated and better their lives, but it really teaches you actually nothing. I taught myself everything I know about how to run a business over time. And it was fun. I always viewed it all more like a hobby.
Yeah.
I still do. More so now than ever. I never really viewed it as work. It was always just like a project I was working on. It was fun, and I felt so self-motivated, and I enjoyed learning the language of business. And really, business is a language, no different than learning Spanish or German. It's a language. You learn it over time. Business is a language.
Yeah.
You know, and it comes with practice.
Mm. Yeah, 100%, man. Yeah, it's, you know, I don't know if you're aware of a chap called Robert Kiyosaki. Have you heard Robert?
I do. He is somebody I watch. Is he going to be on this podcast?
I hope so, one day, mate.
So do I. That would be nice to be hanging in that sort of company.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, I'm aware of him. He is, you know, someone I watch a lot of YouTube stuff. I read a lot online, but I'm a more visual learner, and I like to watch videos on people like him. Inspiration in business, because so much translates from one business to another. It doesn't matter if you're a window cleaner or a property developer or you've got a supplement company or, you know, whatever. So much about business is the same across all companies.
Yeah.
So it's easy to watch other companies and other people in business and become inspired, I think. And yes, I know him. What are you going to say about him?
Oh, I was just going to say, because we're talking about teachers, so you probably know he's slightly controversial view on teachers.
Yeah,
he calls them all fake.
Yeah, yeah. He wrote the book "Rich Dad Poor Dad."
Rich Dad Poor Dad, mate. Yes, and that one of the first books, kind of personal development books I ever read, and that kind of opened my eyes to everything. It were.
I haven't actually read the book, but I'm aware of it. As I say, I'm not much of a reader. I get bored. I prefer to watch, but I have watched interviews with him, and I'm aware of his theories on the mindset of teachers and families. And, you know, you're not taught. The bottom line is there for your viewers, in case they don't know who this person is. The bottom line of Robert's theories is you're not taught to be successful. You're not taught to go after the money or the success. You know, you're taught in your culture of your family, your friends, and your education to get a job.
Yeah,
that's what everyone is. It's not education; it's brainwashing. You're brainwashed to, you know, get these qualifications in these subjects, 99% of which you're never going to use or need, and then go and get a job to earn a monthly salary.
Yeah.
And that's it. And then what you're going to do with that money that you earn is you're going to pay into a system where there's a few people up here that are really taking the money.
That's
what education actually is.
I couldn't have explained it better myself, really. But it basically, you know, like you said there, it's all about mass production of employees. That's how he sees the education system, and it's done a lot of great things. You know, certainly opened my eyes, and I think he has with a lot of other people as well. So
he's a good one. Yeah, quite right.
Yeah, you're saying there, Lee, about you don't like reading. I don't read. I listen audio myself, so audio books and podcasts. but yeah, we all learn in different ways, don't we, mate? And I'm just ask while we're on the education thing there, Lee. If you could add one subject into the school curriculum, what would it be, and why?
Ooh. How to pick a favourite?
If you can probably add a couple.
I would probably just relate back to what I just said about business studies as a subject.
Yeah,
it'd be really great if, you know, some successful business people that have made their money and they're kind of twiddling their thumbs out there now because they're a bit later in life, or maybe they're young business people that are successful. Plenty of young people are. It'd be really good if they were in a school or a college teaching people, this is how you actually set up a company. Yeah. These are the things you need to do to set up a company. This is how you need to consider your cash flow. These are the people you should probably talk to in terms of employment law and accountancy, things like that. I would like to see business studies actually be teaching business. There would be that. But then that wouldn't necessarily appeal to everyone to go and, you know, start a business. So really, the better benefit would be teaching people to manage their money and budget. Yeah. Because obviously, you know, debt is a growing problem. Mm. People are just up to their eyeballs in debt. And that's a situation that's getting worse and worse. And this kind of living from hand to mouth thing, month to month, doesn't need to happen. Educating young people on managing their money and how to make their money work for them more would be more useful than just business studies teaching how to open a business. You know, those two things. So I can't just pick one. It would have to be those two, I think.
Yeah, perfect, mate. And every person that we ask on here normally says the kind of the same thing. So why is it not happening? That's the question.
Because there is actually an answer to that, because actually debt makes money. Debt actually creates money for the richer portion of the population. Mm. And there needs to be a certain degree of debt. You know, when you look at, sectors of business that are booming, particularly in the UK, finance is right up the top. You know, debt, giving companies or people debt is right at the top of where a huge amount of money is being made in this country particularly. So, yes, that's kind of why it's not taught, you know, because there's a degree of certain levels of society wanting other levels of society to have a lot of debt. If I could just say that without being too non-PC.
No, it's all right. It's pretty obvious. It's big part of a bigger picture and a bit, you know, big controlling system. But we'll not get too controversial. I don't want the podcast taken down. So I heard something quite interesting from a chap called Zig Ziglar, another one. Have you heard of Zig Ziglar before, Lee?
No, this is a new one.
I need to check him out, man. His quality. He's like top salesperson, and he wrote a book called See You at the Top.
Mm.
And he talks about a story where he asks a crowd full of people. He says, you know, when you're looking to hire your perfect employee, or you're looking to describe your perfect employer, what qualities would you look for? And nine out of 10 people listed attitudes rather than skills. And I just thought that's such a profound thing when you think about it, isn't it? You know, rather than, you know, people wanted someone who was reliable, hardworking, disciplined, you know, rather than saying, oh, I want someone who's good at maths.
Yeah.
You know, and I think...
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think looking at that, maybe that's something we need to really knuckle down on with our employees and companies and just our children as well.
I think the children is the key word there. And what you said there, I agree. So I don't know that gentleman or his book, but what you've said about that makes perfect sense to me.
Mm.
And, you know, I've got a small business compared to some of the people you've had on here. But again, like my point earlier of certain things are the same across all business, this would be one of them. And that is a good employee. And I've been an employer for more than 10 years. It is all about the attitude of people and their personality, rather than they got this GCSE or that. I don't even look at that. When I'm looking through CVs, I don't care what subjects they got this or that or the other in. It's actually, I think this is where it comes down to the family unit. It's what you're taught from your parents and your family.
Yeah.
Actually, that and what you're born with that will make you either a good employee or a good employer. You know, all the skills can be taught. The skills you can teach someone. You know,
okay.
If someone's going to be a brain surgeon, then they're going to need to have. You know, no one's going to hire a brain surgeon that hasn't been to medical school. So obviously, there are those extremes, but generally, you know, if I need a staff member, a colleague to join us in my company, then it's really just the attitude of the person. It's that wanting to, they want to turn up on time every day. They want to get out of bed and go to work and get on with their job in a good fashion. You know, people that are unreliable, it's because they're brought up a certain way. People that have the right work ethic are brought up a certain way. It doesn't matter what actual skills they have 99% of the time. You can teach that to them if they're open to learning about it. And that is all about their attitude.
There you go. Yeah, it always comes back to the attitude. So, you know, it's so important, isn't it? It's attitude's everything. And like I say, if you've got the correct attitude, you can learn any skill you want. And so it always comes back to that, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So it's interesting that you look for that when you're looking for employees as well. So obviously, from when you were just a one-man band, and obviously a lot has happened in between the one-man band and where we are today, Lee. So, can you pinpoint it down to a certain moment where you knew it was going to be a big company, or did it just?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I can actually. The thing is, right from the start, I always wanted to just take on more work, you know, and grow. Early years, I didn't so much think about it being a bigger company, but I did realize fairly early on that there wasn't really a big company. And when I say big company, some of your viewers, you know, some people you have on here are way bigger companies than mine. But I mean, in the wonderful world of residential window cleaning. Okay. Yeah. What I noticed there, that there weren't any big companies. There were plenty of big companies that did commercial window cleaning, and there weren't really any that did residential. And I spent a reasonable amount of time trying to find those companies, and that's how I know they didn't exist. Because I would have potentially liked to have rung them up and said, can I get some advice? You know, can you mentor me? You know, because
yeah.
I was always driven and I was always working hard. But at the same time, I was in my sort of mid-20s and, you know, having a bit of fun and partying yeah. into my early 30s and whatnot. And I always wanted more. And, I bought a second van and a third. And it sort of went like that, slowly but surely. I realized there was a gap in the market, is the point I'm making about sort of the difference between sort of commercial window cleaning and residential. You know, there was no big company in residential window cleaning, really. Mostly it was the one man operator or one man and his mate. And, you know, there are a handful of companies that maybe had, two or three vans out on the road serving the customer. So I realized there was a gap there, maybe for a bigger company that perhaps looked and operated like a commercial business, but they served the residential customer. I saw that there was a gap for that, and there certainly was. And then to answer your question, was there a moment that I knew it was going to go big or wanted it to go big? There really was. And I turned 35 years old. I'm 40 years old now. And I kind of realized that I'd been maybe partying a little bit too hard. I had grown my business up to a certain point. I was off the tools, so to speak. I didn't do the labor anymore. And I had three, four vans out on the road. And I had a little commercial unit where we were based. And I was doing okay. And I earned some good money and whatever. But I got to 35 years old and I suddenly had this moment where I thought I could have made this much more than it is by now. You know, I knew I had it in me to really take it up to the next level, really take it to those higher levels. And I decided to do it. I made a decision. This was a really powerful moment. It occurred to me that somewhere in the UK, someone had the biggest residential window cleaning business in the country. They may not have even known that they were the biggest one in the country, but someone had that. And I thought to myself, I'm going to do that. That's going to be me. And I'm going to do anything it takes to get on with it. And I'm going to really knuckle down and apply myself as hard as I possibly can. And really just focus entirely on that. And that was at the moment I decided that I was going to sell my house to use the equity I had built up over the previous nearly 10 years to put that money into the company and really take it to the extreme level. And I thought to myself, if I sell my house to do this, and I had a nice house, I had a nice lifestyle already. My friends thought I'd lost my mind. I remember my mum cried when I told her what I would do. I had a nice car and a nice house and I earned good money and this and that. But I knew it could be so much more. And by this point, I had a reasonably good business model and I kind of thought, well, I know what I'm doing. But I thought, if I sell my house and just put it all in, it's like when you're at the poker table and you just go all in on your hand. You have to have faith that the hand you've got is going to defeat everyone else. And I had faith in myself that I knew what I was doing. And if I sold my house, that would kick me up the arse, so to speak, because now there's no option to fail. I can't fail because I've just liquidated my house, rented a room in my mum's house as a lodger, stored all my stuff, sold the sports car that I had, and literally just poured it all in. And I thought, I can't allow that to fail. And believe me, it really focused my mind more than ever.
Yeah.
And it really took off from that point. And it's even now, 5 years later, we're growing at a rate that I've literally never seen. It's growing more now than than it ever has. And you're always learning and, you know, applying what you learn. And I'm always just reinvesting every penny to really push on. But yes, the question you asked was there a moment? And there was a moment, definitely. I decided that we were going to be the biggest company doing what we do in the UK. I decided that not only that we were going to run in a way that nobody else did. And I decided that I would not stop until we were a multi-million pound turnover business, which we are approaching now, actually. We're not actually quite there now, but by the end of the year, we are on target for that, definitely. Yeah. So that does not exist in residential window cleaning anywhere in the UK. We could probably already state that we are the UK's largest residential window cleaners. We definitely will be by the end of the year. I've never felt more motivated, actually, than we do now. And it almost doesn't become about the money. In my mind, the money is almost like Monopoly money. It's just a number on a screen. Yeah. It's the challenge that drives you, you know. And what I've learned is success in business, or maybe even other things in life you can apply that to, is a decision, actually. You can choose to be successful in whatever it is you're doing. You just have to believe in yourself and get on with it. It's the number one thing, is actually just do something. People always say to me, like, how do you do it? Like, you know, what's the number one bit of advice you would give? I have a lot of people in our industry, Alex, you know, the window cleaning industry, contact me often. Yeah. And the common question is, what's the number one piece of advice? And actually, it's just go and do it. Yeah. Just do something.
Yeah.
You know, it's different to what you did today or yesterday. Do something different. Because if you do the same thing, you're still in that cycle. Like when I was, you know, in these office jobs, it's, you know, you do the same thing every day, the same thing happens.
Yeah.
You know, the number one piece of advice is take action.
Yeah.
Worry about everything else after that. I didn't know how to start a business. I didn't know what to do. I just got on and did it. And I thought, I'll worry about the details later, you know, and then you learn those things along the way.
Yeah. Yeah, man, that's brilliant. It's great to hear that, man. It's just like, yeah, you just realize, like, you know, no one else is going to do this for you. You've got to do it yourself.
Absolutely.
And when you know, and these are just words, what we're saying here, but you've got to, when you actually feel that inside you, it kind of, it's hard to put that fire out, isn't it? I think
it is.
Yeah.
It becomes an addictive way of living. In a nice way, you know, you can be addicted to all sorts of things in life. You know, you can be addicted to alcohol or drugs and your life's going to go down. People get addicted to exercise or whatever. And, you know, for me, it's, when you take those first steps, it's difficult. You know, you don't know what to do. But as time goes on, and you just, I used to say that running a business was just a problem solving exercise. It was a continuous problem solving exercise. You solve a lot of those problems you have to solve to move forward. You only have to solve them once, and then you've learned that bit, and then you move on to the next bit. And before you know it, you're a couple of years down the line and your business has moved on. But that feeling that you get from solving those problems, you know, you've got the problem, you think it through, how am I going to overcome this hurdle? You come up with the idea, usually in the middle of the night, about 3 o'clock in the morning is when I come up with the idea. Yeah. And then I can't wait to get to work the next morning to put that into practice. And then you see it work or fail. As long as you learn something, you move forward, you know.
Yeah.
This is the other thing that people don't do. Not only do they not take action, which is the most important thing to do, and this is something you see across everyone that's got any business that's had any degree of success, is, and it's very true, and I feel this myself constantly, you have to be comfortable with being uncomfortable. You have to be able to move out of that cycle every month, that comfort. That cycle every month is a comfort zone. And being outside of that comfort zone feels uncomfortable, but something's changing, something's different. That's why you feel uncomfortable. You're now outside of this monotonous routine. And you have to be comfortable with being uncomfortable, because it's that that is making something change. It's that that progresses your business.
Yeah.
And you actually become addicted to that as well. I don't want to feel comfortable. I don't want to think, oh, this is all easy. I'll just tick along every single month. As long as I feel that degree of this, it's a bit scary. You know, it's a bit, oh, maybe I don't quite know what I'm doing, but I'm just going to do it anyway. I don't feel comfortable with that. As long as I feel that way, I know that my business is moving in the right direction. And it is, you know, more now than ever. You know, and that's another thing that people just can't do. It's just too much like hard work. No, I'll put it off till tomorrow. Maybe next week. And of course, tomorrow never comes. Next week never comes. Not in that respect, anyway. 6 months later, a year later, they're the same, you know.
That's it, yeah. There's a saying there that kind of sums up that what you've just said. It's like, you know, be better than yesterday, but not as good as tomorrow.
I like that. That's one I'm not familiar with, but I do like that.
You'll have to note these down.
You've read all the books. I can tell.
I've listened to them.
Yeah.
But yeah, it, you know, it's just about, like you say, continuously growing, and rather than just going through that monotonous day-to-day thing, you've just got to have that constant growth, haven't you? And, you know, the small daily changes, obviously, the compound effect takes control, doesn't it? And it's absolutely, like you say, you're experiencing that now. You know, you're saying like your business is growing, you know, quicker than it ever has. And it's down to the small things, yeah.
It is, and all those small things add up. And this is, I think, what blocks people. Another thing, you know, they want to be here in their career or their business or whatever it is, and maybe they're here now, and all they can see is this mountain at the top. They're looking up from there, and they, oh, how am I ever going to get up to that? You know, but what they should try to focus on is the step that's right in front of them, the very first step. You know.
And I like that.
There's that phrase that, you know, a 1,000-mile journey begins with the first step.
Yeah.
You know, and for me, I'm a very visual person. I have an ability to visualize my goals very clearly in my mind. I'm there now, you know, where I want my business to be in 12 months. I'm already there in my head.
Yeah.
And I picture it every day. What will it be like? What will my day be like? What will be different to now? And I build this like virtual reality in my mind about the goals I have or the ambitions I have. And I'm kind of already there in my mind. And I think about it all day long, every single day. And I make sure that today I took a step that took me just one step closer to that vision, just one step. And then the next day, another step, or the next month, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And as long as you do that, you gravitate in the direction of your goal. It's this power of visualization is a true thing. You know, you read a lot of books about that. You hear a lot of people talking about that. And, you know, maybe if that's not something that someone watching this has ever done, they might think, oh, well, that's a load of rubbish, whatever. You've got to be lucky. You've got to win the lottery. You've got to have rich parents. Someone's going to have to just like discover you or give you a break. It's not true. The visualizing thing absolutely does. I have this obsessive mind when it comes to focusing on my goals, and you just move in the direction of them. And then you kind of reach them, but you never do it at the same time, because as you approach your goal, there's another goal, and you know, and this is where the phrase sort of success from a business point of view, or maybe even others, success is a journey, not a destination. You know, you don't arrive at success and then just think, right, that's it. You know, people say to me all the time that know me, oh, you'll never stop growing your business. I talk about my sort of goal when we might reach them. You'll never get to your goal, you know, because there'll always be more and more. And I sort of disagree with that. You know, you can change your goal. Your goal doesn't have to be in one line in this direction. I have a goal with my business, and then I have some other ambitions which I'd like to go down. And, you know, you can do it because you've got the confidence that you've built off your initial success, you know. Again, it's just get on with it, you know, get on and do it.
Yeah.
Number one.
Yeah, man. That's That's so important, mate. Like, talk about the setting goals thing there. It's genuinely about, you know, enjoying the journey, isn't it, and the process. Enjoy the process.
Very true. Yeah. Actually, the funny thing about that, and actually that I was thinking about that before we started talking, actually. I was thinking about what the things we might talk about today, and enjoying it is something that didn't come as naturally to me. After I sold my house, I suddenly had taken myself out of my car. I was right in a comfort zone there, and I realized, you know, I had a nice house, a nice car. I had a great lifestyle that most of my friends would have killed for. And I was a bit too comfortable. And that's why I realized I needed to do this. You know, I could have borrowed the money to you know, grow the business. People said to me, oh, why did you sell your house? You know, why didn't you remortgage your house? That was a bad move financially. Maybe it was a bad move financially from some points of view, but it was a good move for my self-motivation because I took myself so far out of my comfort zone. I was so uncomfortable that I worked like an absolute machine. And I found an entirely new side to myself. You know, I was relentless. Nothing was going to stop me. I still feel the same way now. But coming back to my point here of enjoying the journey, for the first couple of years, we're 5 years down the line now since I sold my house. And the first couple of years of that, I was trying to force it forward so hard. It was like a battle. And I really didn't enjoy it. And I burnt myself out a couple of times. Because, you know, I'm a bit of an impatient person. I want everything now, or yesterday would be even better than now. And I just wanted to go from here to here in, you know, next to no time at all, 12 months, full, you know, 24 months. And I kind of didn't enjoy it as much. But, you know, in the last couple of years of the journey, I have really enjoyed it more than ever, actually, particularly now. And one thing I noticed is that when I sort of relaxed a little bit about it and just kind of let it happen, you know, you have to be driven. You have to drive your business forward with some degree of will and force. But you can overcook that, and the energy turns a bit negative and people around you sense that, and you know, the road gets a bit more rocky, let's just say, with, you know, your colleagues and whatnot. But in the last couple of years, while I've enjoyed it, I've noticed it's actually been much easier. It actually has grown faster by sort of trying to enjoy the process, accepting that, you know, we are here where we are now, but what I'm trying to achieve is coming, you know, and believe, having the faith in that. There were a couple of times in the first couple of years after selling my house, I thought maybe I've made a really big mistake. But I sort of re-examined my expectations and my plan. And actually, I love it right now. I can't wait to get to work every day. I really enjoy it. In fact, I don't enjoy the weekends as much because, you know, I don't go to work, although I'm always at work in here. You know, I technically never stop in my mind.
Yeah.
But I genuinely enjoy getting up and going to work. I don't have to do that anymore every day. I have people that run the company with me, but I enjoy being there and watching it. And as I said earlier, it's like a hobby. It's like a project. It's
You're
watching it sort of develop. And particularly now, it's, you know, it's becoming more than me. It's a team effort now. And, you know, it's kind of just taking off under its own steam, where I'm kind of not putting as much input in myself, but enjoying it is definitely something that if someone can really try to focus on, just enjoy it and let it happen, be driven, work hard, try to enjoy it along the way, is a big deal. And I actually spent a bit of money and used a life coach in the last sort of 6 months. Yeah. And one of the things that I really took away from that was trying to live a little bit more in the here and now and enjoy the here and now a little bit more, because always I've got this visualizing mind of my goals. They're always a year or two down the line.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm living there a year or two down the line and not really caring at all about today. And you know, that can have an impact on your relationships, your friendships, you know, trying to enjoy it a little bit more along the way. And as soon as I've done that, I've actually noticed the business is growing better, you know, and I'm enjoying it. It's definitely a factor.
Yeah, that's great. That's great advice, mate. And, you know, some other people we've spoke to, like, you know, like sporting stars and, you know, Premier League footballers and stuff like that, they say that often they wish that they could go back in time and be present in that moment, because, you know, you can't get these moments back, can you? So,
all right.
Yeah, that's an important point, mate. It's a good one, is that? So I'm interested, Lee. So, some of your daily habits. What's some of your daily habits to keep in a peak shape, peak frame of mind, and a smart haircut like you've got?
Well, it's falling out actually. So unfortunately,
you're gonna be off to Turkey then.
Yeah, right. Yes, my hairline is running away from my forehead as we speak. But actually, I've had this kind of hairstyle for most of my life. But daily habits. I mean, for me, things that really help. I've always been quite into like health and fitness. People that may know me will know that about me, and that translates a lot to business, actually.
Oh yeah.
You'll notice actually, a lot of quite successful business people are often in really good shape physically. Mm. Because I've always been, I don't actually play any sport, but I've always like worked out in the gym, right? Mm. Weightlifting's my thing, and bike riding. I like a lot of walks and bike rides and weight training. And I've been sort of into that for, you know, since I was a teenager, you know, 25 years. Yeah. And the discipline that comes with a sort of a health and fitness lifestyle happens to translate really well to a business lifestyle. So habits I have are, you know, keeping physically fit and in shape, certainly. Nutrition, big part of that. I want to say getting good sleep, but I don't sleep that well because I can't switch. My mind is always going a million miles an hour. And, you know, if I happen to wake up in the night and I think even a single thing about work, suddenly I'm on the idea train in my mind and I just can't stop. Some of the best ideas I've had for the business happen at 3 o'clock in the morning, as I mentioned earlier. But certainly daily habits, getting up at the same time, going to bed at the same time, something I try to do a lot. Being in a physical cycle is good. Lots of exercise, body and mind as one sort of thing.
Yeah.
For me, sort of relaxing has always been a harder thing in my life because I can be a highly strung person. My mind's always going, but trying to take some time to relax in the last, again, a bit like the whole kind of trying to enjoy your journey, trying to take some time out to not think about work and have a rest is definitely a good idea. You know, people can't expect to like party all night and be up at the crack of dawn and be the best version of themselves to then grow a successful business. There ultimately has to be some degree of sacrifice day to day or month to month if you want to start a business or be successful in a business. Ultimately, it's hard work, you know, in any industry. You have to work hard. Now, people always say, you know, work smarter, not harder. That's true. But usually at the beginning, it's work hard.
Yeah.
Just work hard.
Yeah.
And then when the momentum has built and you get to a point, you know, that's when you work smart. You know, we still have to work hard, obviously, but that's where the working smarter comes in more at a later stage. But ultimately, you know, becoming successful in business is a result of hard work and sacrifice. You know, there was a time where I just had to go to work practically every single day. You know, I felt uncomfortable if I didn't go to work all weekend, you know, whatever. You have to try to keep a work-life balance. But as I said, I committed myself to succeed and failure wasn't an option. So after I sold my house, I thought I am just going to do whatever it takes. Yeah. And there was no other option other than that. And I'm kind of still on that.
Yeah, man. No, it's great hearing that because, you know, you talk about your health and fitness, and I think there's a direct correlation between healthy and fit person and a good business person, like you say. And you know a lot of the people we've spoke to all have fitness and health in their routine. And it's not a coincidence, I don't think. And
yeah, I mean, if you're a negative, depressive, not motivated kind of person, you're just not going to start a business or build a business that you might have already started. You know, exercise is the best antidepressant there is. But, you know, it's much easier to take a pill or something like that. Being physically fit will help you be mentally fit. And, you know, I've had struggles with this over the years. It's not like I'm Superman, but it's definitely true that if you're fitter and stronger in that respect, you're probably a more confident person. If you're in shape, you know, you're probably a more energized person, a more positive person, and you probably have more of a can-do attitude instead of a can't-do, can't-be-bothered attitude. You know, I'm going in my gym in my garage when we finish this interview.
Yeah.
I'm tired. It's Friday afternoon. It's been a very busy couple of weeks at work. It's been quite stressful, which drains you as well. It would be really easy for me after this to just go sit on the sofa, get a beer or a takeaway or something. But I'm going in the gym and that's it.
Yeah.
Because although it's hard for me to want to do it, I know I will feel better for it. And, you know, that is mental discipline, not physical. And that translates into business directly, you know. Absolutely, it does. You're right.
Yeah, 100%, man. Like, I've started running like last 12 months or so. I play football. I've started running and I get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and go on a run. And like you say, I have some of my best thoughts at that time. You know, it's such a powerful thing. But like you say, the hardest thing is getting up and putting your shoes on.
Absolutely.
And that's the discipline thing. And, you know, my mates think I'm absolutely crazy.
I don't. It's brilliant.
It's fantastic. Honestly, like you say, you know how good it makes you feel. And I feel on top of the world after you've got up and, you know, you've beaten that little voice and beating that little voice in your head. And, you know,
committing to sort of an exercise routine in your lifestyle is much more of a mental and spiritual thing than it is physical. You're doing something with your body, but it's, you know, that's where I switch off from work. If I don't switch off from work while I'm working out, I tend to have good ideas while I'm working out.
Yeah.
It's a relaxation thing. And it lifts your mood. It does. And actually anyone that's interested in that sort of routine in their life, something that's very common to take away from an advice and exercise and lifestyle thing is that, you know, people will say, what's the best type of exercise? What's the best type of exercise for this or that? There is no best type of exercise. The type of exercise that's best is the type that you can commit to doing and that you enjoy and that you can do on a regular basis. You're saying, Alex, about your running. Running is not something I've ever done in terms of exercise. I do my weight training. I do my bike rides. I used to swim quite a lot. But running for me, don't like it, you know, so I don't do it. But it's the best type of exercise is the one you can do consistently, whatever that might be for anyone. It's all good. And something's always better than nothing.
Yeah, that's the main thing, man. Lee, it's been an absolute pleasure, mate. I think we could probably do a part two with you, to be fair. I've still got loads of questions to ask you. It's great, mate. I've just got a few little trademarky questions we ask, mate.
Go for it.
To finish off.
I'll try and give the quicker version of the answer rather than a sermon. Go on.
Right, mate. Give us a fact about yourself that most people will not know, if you can.
Oh, my. A fact about myself that most people will not know. I would say, coming back to the sort of the the mental side of exercise and stuff, I used to suffer a lot with anxiety and panic attacks. Not everyone would know that about me. People close to me know that, but people in our industry that look to me for advice or whatever, I've struggled a lot with those things over the years. Not so much in the last few years, but you know, coming up, lots of sort of problems with anxiety and sort of panic attacks and so on, which is makes it very hard to sort of function on a day-to-day basis. So sort of overcoming that, some people would find surprising about me, because I come across like a very confident, self-made, let's say, person. So I would suggest that maybe a lot of people looking at where I'm at now wouldn't have believed that. But lots of people suffer from things like that, and people don't know. That would be something I would say to that question.
Well, thanks for sharing that, mate. It's, you know, pretty personal thing to share, but you know, we all have as downfalls and as problems, don't we?
We're all human beings.
We're all human beings.
Is the phrase. Everyone's different. Yeah. It's you know, it can be a struggle for anyone, no matter what their situation is my point of that.
Yeah, that's it, mate. Brilliant, pal. So if you could invite someone into this Zoom chat with us now, who would it be and why? And they can be with us or not with us.
As I mentioned, I lost my father at a very young age. I was only 3 years old.
Yeah.
So there would be other people to invite, but I would potentially invite him. He had his own business and was a relatively successful man before he passed away. So it'd be interesting to share my journey with my father and find out what he thought of that. You know, getting that kind of opinion from your family is nice. So yeah, it would be him, but there would be others as well.
Yeah, that's nice, mate. I'm sure I'd be proud of you, pal. what business did he have?
He had a company that did the render of buildings, you know, different sorts of render finish sort of residential buildings and commercial buildings.
Right. He'd have been raking it in with all this care render that's going about now, wouldn't it?
Yeah, you never know.
Bless him. Just to finish on, Lee, just to end on a nice high note, and what kind of final piece of advice would you have for someone that's, you know, at the start of the journey or looking to take control of their own life, really?
Probably two things. First is believe in yourself, and you know, and you know, it can be a lonely journey when everyone around you doubts what you're doing. You know, when I started a window cleaning business with a bucket and a ladder, there were a lot of negative opinions around me. Let's just say that. And you know, I believed in myself, and that was that. I always had a lot of self-belief and self-confidence, but there's two bits of advice that sort of feed into each other. The first is believe in yourself and don't listen to the negative energy of other people around you. Unfortunately, this seems to be something that's quite common in the UK. In America, it's the other way around. You know, people want to build you up. They want to push you on.
Yeah.
You know, they celebrate you if you're successful. Around, you know, in the UK, it's hater culture. So believe in yourself and have self-confidence when other people around you don't. And the next thing is something I've already said in this meeting, and that is take action. Yeah. Do something about it. You know, no one's going to do it for you. You have to do it for yourself. And the more you do something for yourself and see a result, the more your self-belief grows. And those two things pump each other up. And then before you know it, you're like a freight train steaming ahead. No one's going to tell you anything different. You're going to go for it. And then those negative people see what's happening, and maybe their opinions change as well. Yeah. So those two things, believe in yourself and then take action.
Yeah. Amazing, mate. Yeah. Yeah, I'm just thinking about that point you made about there is a lot of, you know, negative people sat behind keyboards normally in the UK, and you know, they do everything to try pull you down. But like you say, if you've got the self-belief, take action. Literally anything's possible.
I said to someone only this week, someone who has a YouTube channel who did a video talking about the subject of keyboard warrior haters. And I know this person, and I said to them, I've taken a lot of negative attitudes from forums in our industry across the UK and people generally. I use that as a success gauge. You know, if I'm getting a lot of hate and negative input from other people, particularly in my own industry,
yeah,
I must be doing really well.
Yeah.
You know, it's a success gauge. You can actually learn to love it, you know, yeah, rather than letting haters bring you down and absorbing it as negative energy. You can absorb that energy and turn it into a positive thing, because you can say to yourself, well, if I was a nobody, if I wasn't standing out for some reason, these people wouldn't even know who I am, never mind want to tell me negative things about who I am or what I'm doing. Yeah. They're jealous, or they feel threatened by you, or both. And that is because you are having a degree of success.
Yeah,
and I actually love it.
Yeah.
I really do.
Nicely. Nice. I love that. Yeah. It's a funny one, because I don't know. It spurs from all sorts of stuff. You know, I think it's down to jealousy a lot of the time. And
absolutely.
It's not a nice trait.
Jealous because it's easier to be jealous than to do one of the two things I said, which is take action and do something about. Yeah. Just choose to be successful, to make a decision and have the conviction in yourself to see it through. And a big problem in the world these days with people, particularly young people, is that everything has to be instant gratification, instant this, instant that.
Yeah.
Nobody's willing to understand that success in business is a long journey. And you're not going to, you know, some people start a business and they're a multimillionaire the same year. Mm. Great. But for 99.9% of most people in business, it's a long, tough journey, where you need self-belief and you need to take action. And the sort of the hater culture, it stems from jealousy, resentment, and feeling threatened. Yeah. It's just easier to do that than improve yourself, unfortunately.
Yeah. That's right.
But as I say, I absorb it and I love it. It means I'm doing well.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a great way to look at it, mate. Like you can't control what other people say, but you can control how you think about it, and you know,
absolutely,
you've got the control over it. Then, so mate, it's been an absolute pleasure, Lee. Thank you for speaking with us, mate. Giving us your time.
Thanks, Alex. Pleasure. I enjoyed
that. Keep building, mate. Keep growing. I'm going to do the same. I've got a bit of catching up to do to you, but. I'm sure we'll get there someday.
You can. Why not?
Why not?
Choose to.
Yeah, I've already chose to. I've already chose to.
Well done.
Mate, best of luck, pal.
Thanks.
Let's keep in touch, mate. I look forward to sharing this one.
Thanks, Alex.
All right, Lee. Take care, mate.
Take care.
Bye, mate.
See ya.
Just a quick shout to our sponsor, the Turmeric Co. We've started working with these guys recently. It's an absolute pleasure. Myself and Craig were actually taking the shots before we teamed up with those guys. Absolutely amazing for recovery. There's loads of health benefits to the little turmeric shots, and they're very tasty as well. So they're full of antioxidants, the source of vitamin C and B6. It results in a healthy immune system and also supports digestion as well. So yeah, we did say that we wanted to work with a company that we genuinely believe in, and we do believe in their product, and we continue to use it daily. So if you want to try the shots, you can head to the show notes. We've got a 10% off discount for all of our listeners. So you just got to follow the link and then hit the code in TSMM10 at checkout. And go get your shots.
Thanks for listening to another inspiring self-made story. And we hope you enjoyed the show. We would be very grateful if you could kindly leave us a review, as it will help us impact a wider audience. You can do this on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. If you want to reach out on the socials, find us across all platforms using @TheSelfMadeMindPodcast. See you next time, and happy success making.